is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Beijing, Wall Street Journal. Police fanned out across China's big cities in an effort to prevent fresh protests as security services harnessed the country's pervasive surveillance system to hunt down participants in mass demonstrations calling for an end to strict COVID curbs and criticizing national leaders, Xi Jinping in particular, I add. The National Health Commission goes on to report, appeared to deliver the government's first acknowledgement of the protests. This statement, the problems recently reflected by the masses are not primarily about pandemic prevention and control per se, going on to blame poor implementation of controls at the local level. I welcome Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, and long for the Wall Street Journal in Hong Kong, observing the brutality and the inarticulateness and the arrogance of the People's Republic of China, all put together in one package these moments of the response, the sloppy, unprepared, and brutal response to people asking for freedom. Mary, a very good evening to you. Your response is extremely well-informed because you've been not only writing about this for years for the Journal, but you lived it traveling with the Secretary of State. What is your measure right now about how the regime is seeking to respond and the courage or recklessness of the protesters? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. You cannot underscore enough how courageous these protesters are. I think it's hard for us in the West or free societies to really understand the brutality of the regime, the oppressive nature of the surveillance state, and you know the threats, not just to themselves, but to their closest family members and to their friends, just for walking out onto the street and holding up a blank sheet of paper. As for these protests and their significance, it's important not to view them in isolation. The Chinese Communist Party has not been around forever. It has proved a brutal hand over the heads and around the necks of the Chinese people since its inception, whether it was the Great Leap Forward or the Cultural Revolution. When the Chinese people get a chance to express their disgust at the incompetence and the inhumanity of the regime, they do so, and they've done so repeatedly for decades. The Democracy Wall movement in the 70s, the Tiananmen protests, which, by the way, didn't just happen in Beijing, erupted all over the country in the 80s. The Charter 08 movement, which came to be before the Beijing Olympics, and most recently, the protests in Hong Kong. And these are only the protests that we can see outside of the country. There are constant protests inside the country, mostly in localities surrounding local issues. The reason that these protests are different is because they concern issues that relate to national policies that touch everyone in China, namely the COVID zero policy that Xi Jinping decreed, which has been, I mean, to say that it's totalitarian and brutal is it isn't really sufficient. I mean, you've had people locked in apartment buildings. You've had food shortages because supply chains have been messed up. You've had constant testing. You've had workers locked in their facilities. I mean, this is just complete madness. So this is a national uprising, and it's national in scope. These protests have erupted from the south in Hong Kong and Guangzhou, all the way up to the north in Beijing, all the way over to the west in Xinjiang. So that's why these protests are important, because they represent a real threat to the regime, because it isn't something that's local, it's national, and it's against a policy, it's provoked by a policy that was championed by the general secretary himself, Xi Jinping. Now, whether or not they succeed, that's a different story. I think you'd have to have some member of the Politburo or group of people around Xi Jinping to support the protesters. But we just don't know yet. It's early days. And just to go back to where you began with the response, the regime's response, they're just getting going. So, you know, starting to ramp up the surveillance state, starting to send police out into the streets in the major cities. It takes Beijing a while to ramp up its response. And we'll see how this unfolds in the coming days. But I think we're just at the early stages.
I'm keen on the language, Mary. I read that statement from the National Health Commission, especially the part reflected by the masses. I understand this is in translation, but if anyone in Washington referred to the citizens of our country as the masses, well, it'd be one step to the polling booth to vote that person out of office. And in Europe, I could see immediately that everybody start whistling Yankee Doodle Dandy if somebody called us the masses. Is this routine for the regime to act as if it lives on high on Olympus and treats people as tools to be managed?
Well, I think it's even more significant than that, John. It speaks to the nature of this Marxist-Leninist regime. The Chinese Communist Party rules through intimidation and brutality, and there is no appreciation of the individual in a communist system, just like in the former Soviet system. When they use the word the masses, they mean it. You are seen as part of a collective. You as an individual do not matter. And that's why there is no value to human life in China today, because they don't value it. The only thing that matters is the preservation of the Chinese Communist Party and its power, both internally and externally. And they must, quote unquote, struggle against enemies, both real and perceived. And so that tells you why the leadership has to blame others for the outbreak of COVID and for their incredibly ham-handed response. They're going to blame the United States. They'll blame the CIA. They'll blame local officials. They'll blame everyone but themselves, because they cannot accept responsibility. Because if they accepted responsibility for these gross mistakes that have cost so many human lives, not just in China, but around the world, then the foundation of their leadership crumbles, and they can't have that. So that's why I fear that if these protests continue, which I suspect that they will, because people aren't just fed up with the COVID policies. These protesters are voicing discontent about being lied to repeatedly by the propaganda machine. They are holding up blank sheets of paper calling for democracy and for the rule of law. This isn't just about COVID. This is about grievances with the regime that have been expressed over not just a period of years, but decades. And you layer on top of that an economy which is basically collapsing again because of the CCP's policies. And you have a recipe here for protests that could, continue to erupt for quite some time. And so I fear that we could be looking at a very brutal crackdown. I hope that doesn't happen. But I think it's very important for leaders in other nations to voice support for these protesters who are simply calling for basic human freedoms that all of us should enjoy. I think it's encouraging to see students at places like Columbia University, for instance, get out. These are Chinese students in the United States, and support these protesters. It doesn't have to be a complicated statement. You can simply say, we appreciate that the Chinese people want the same things that we want, that we enjoy here in the United States. And we want that for the Chinese people, because we've enjoyed a long and fruitful relationship with them as Americans for hundreds of years. And we want that to continue.
The neighborhood under perpetual threat by Xi Jinping and his regime. What does this mean for Taipei? What does this mean for Manila, threatened by the overstep of the PLA Navy in the South China Sea?
Oh, I think it makes the situation far more perilous, because we know from past experience that when the domestic situation in China goes south, the leadership often drums up, as I said earlier, others to blame, including foreign nations. And so you could see a manufactured incident very easily, where the regime decides to, sink a Taiwanese cruiser or a Japanese fishing boat, and then He tries to direct the public's attention and anger away from what's going on at home into what's going on abroad.
And Mary, what we have here is a regime that, from the history books, looks unstable. Does that match your sense of proportion here, Mary? Is Xi Jinping unstable?
Well, the frank answer is that we just don't know. We know that he's risen to power by methodically taking out his rivals, not just in the political factions in China, but in the military and the corporate sector. And he's been very successful at doing so. That being said, he has also likely angered many powerful people in China by sidelining them. We have very little insight into the dynamics of the leadership, unfortunately. But in some respects, John, if you're sitting in the White House or the State Department, that's unfortunate, but it isn't handicap. It shouldn't handicap us. We should speak over the leadership to the Chinese people directly, like Reagan did with the Russian people during the Soviet era. We should express sympathy for them. We should stop focusing always on what is coming out of the Politburo Select Committee, and we should focus on the people that we really care about, which are the Chinese people and their well-being.
Last moment, Mary, the image of the Kocheskus on the balcony right before their fall and execution, yelling at the people to be quiet. I remember Madame Kocheskus doing that. Is that possible in China, that Xi Jinping could get out there and start yelling at people? And that would be the end of him. Is it possible that it could be that violent and quick?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. The CCP, again, I want to emphasize, is one of the most brutal regimes in the world. This is a regime that gives sanction to organ harvesting, that's committing genocide against Muslim peoples, which has violently suppressed the Tibetan people for years, any people of faith. There is no value to human life in communist China. And that extends up to leadership just as much as it extends to the ordinary person on the street. And, you know, we have been very bad at predicting when leaders of authoritarian or totalitarian regimes fall. We didn't predict the Arab Spring. We didn't predict the uprisings in Cuba or the courageous people of Iran once again getting out into the streets. So I think we need to be humble about our ability to really see into the future and see what will happen next in communist China. I think the best that we can do is to recognize the nature of this regime, speak honestly about it, not just to the American people, but to our friends and allies around the world, and to get serious about what we want the future to look like, and to understand that China is not a competitor. Competition depends on fair rules of the game that both sides respect. That is not what we are facing here. They are an enemy. And this regime is at a crucial moment, and we ought to be exerting pressure on them right now. This is the time to do it. To secure really what we would like to see in the future, which is a free China.
Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President of Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State. I'm John Batchelor.